Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everyone. I'm Chris Stainis, your host of Voices of Women. I'm the founder of Women of Wisdom, which has presented events for women since 1993 in the Seattle area. And Women of Wisdom's mission is to empower the feminine dreams and spirit within all of us through authentic, intimate, transformative, and healing experiences, where we share our stories, acknowledge our wisdom, and transform our personal and collective consciousness. Our 27th annual conference is coming up this February 15th through the 17th in Seattle, Washington. And we're so excited to be talking to many of the presenters that are going to be there. You can attend 1 or 2 days and experience transformational workshops on creative art, spirituality, body, mind, spirit, healing, movement, manifestation, and so much more. So we invite you to check it out at the womenofwisdom.org website, and you will be witnessed, valued, and inspired coming to our conference. And also check out our Women of Wisdom book. It's actually a compilation of things that have happened at the conference. Many of our speakers, their talks, there's art, poetry, and stories from many of our participants. So our theme this year is Spark Our Creative Fire, Dance in Power, and Beauty. And as I said, you can attend Saturday or Sunday or both days, and you can explore this power and beauty in yourself as a woman. So check out the schedule at womenofwisdom.org. In today's interview, we are joined by international award-winning author, inspirational speaker, and diversity advocate, Sikone Nimenya. In her honest and soul-searching book titled Evolving Through Adversity, Sikone recounts her life growing up in Burundi, a small country in East Central Africa, from her formative years to her immigration journey in North America, beginning in Canada and then the United States. Her TEDx talk on race and other identity constructs titled We Are Not All That Different. Sikone makes the case that despite our differences, people are far more alike than different. She advocates for diversity and inclusion in the educational systems and the workplace, working to bridge the gaps between our diverse and multicultural communities. She shares her story on how she broke free from bondage, and now she travels the world, inspiring her audiences to do the same. She's the author of 2 more books, including a novel, A Hand to Hold, the story of adoption, love, and redemption. For more information about her work, you can check her website out, Sikone Nimenya, SikoneNimenya.com. She's going to be our keynote speaker at our upcoming conference at our evening banquet on Saturday, February 16th. And she'll be sharing this inspiration with our audience. The banquet tickets are part of the Saturday pass because our passes include meals. But there actually are a few banquet tickets where you can buy a ticket just for the banquet. There is a few of those tickets available. So welcome, Sikone.
Thank you so much, Chris, for having me. How are you?
Good. I'm so excited to have you at the conference and here on my show. Let's start with your story. You grew up as a child in Burundi. How was life for you there? And, you know, what it was like leaving the country, what age you were when you left, all that.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for inviting me to speak at the upcoming Women of Wisdom Conference on February 16th. I'm truly excited to meet everyone there. So basically my story, which is my life story that I shared in the book Evolving Through Adversity, is a story of my life journey. I was born and grew up in Burundi, like you just mentioned, and I shared my, you know, what I went through from my formative years to my grown-up years, including fighting to get an education in a country and in a time. I grew up in a time when education, especially for girls, was really not a priority for many families. And mostly if you were a girl, as soon as you hit puberty, you were told that, you know, it's time to get married and bring some fat cows for your family for the dowry. That was the culture. But I fought to get an education, and I was able to attend elementary school and high school. But the adversity in attending school was especially because you had to pay fees, school fees. I know here in the United States, elementary and high school, you don't pay fees, but we did. And so my family couldn't afford to pay for me, and it was always a struggle to see my family not be able to afford the basic needs. So it was a struggle, but I was able to attend school and finish high school, attend the university, and in the end I graduated. I was the first girl in my family, and really even in my village, to graduate from university. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's amazing. And I know that's what it's like in African countries. We're supporting a school in Kenya. There's a woman who's come to Woman of Wisdom, Mary Omalo, from Kenya. And in her school, you know, the kids have to pay for the uniforms, and the public schools pay for the books, all that. So it is an expense. So that's quite amazing that you got all the way through a university. So what? Tell us about how you had to break free from bondage there, or from break free from your country, to why you had to leave the country.
So to be able to leave the country, actually this came from the war that had erupted in the country in 1993. I had gone to Canada, joining my husband who was a student there, and we were getting ready to go back, and then in 93 the war started and we couldn't go. So we ended up becoming war refugees in Canada, where we started over. And, you know, as a refugee, when you have to leave everything behind, and the challenges of integration, starting over when you're uprooted from everything you know, it was very challenging. So I also went back to school in Canada, and then did business administration. And later, when I moved to the United States, I did an MBA. So education for me was key. That was one of the things really that got me out of the bondage. There was also this cultural hindrance that, you know, always disempowered women and girls, and not being able to go to school, or not being able to afford things for your family, and always being dependent, women in those circumstances. So I wanted to be a voice for those who didn't have the chance to attend school like me, or have that voice. So that's why I share inspiration through my writing or speaking, and being an advocate for women's issues and all that.
Have you been back to Burundi since then?
Oh, yes. I have been to visit my family. I still have my extended family there. And, I've been able to go to visit during times that when there was peace.
Mm-hmm. When did peace come to Burundi?
Particularly the war I'm talking about, of 1993, that one lasted more than 10 years. And then after there was relative peace, and we were able to visit our family. But the war killed more than 300,000 people, and then a few years later, like 2015, actually, they started another strife, and even now there is a lot of refugees, Burundian refugees, outside of the country, especially in bordering countries. So, it's always been difficult for the country to be able to stabilize and then be, you know, economically safe.
Mm-hmm. Is it hard for you to be away from there, to not help in any way towards peace, or?
I mean, what I can do personally, what I can do is use my voice to inspire especially young women in those countries, and even young men really, because we need to inspire young people, because young people are going to be able to change not only their countries and really change the world, because they're coming from a different generation than where we came from, and then they're going to start new policies and new leadership styles, and be able to lead with peace. So that's what I do whenever I have a chance to be able to talk to young people and you know, help them see the big picture, and then help them see how they fit in the big spectrum of life.
You said you came from a village. How many people lived in your village?
Oh, my God. I don't think I know exactly the number, but, excuse me, Burundi is a small country, but it's very populated. So I would say, you know, it's a lot of people in each part of the world. I mean, the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wanted to get a sense of the size of the village that you grew up in. So you immigrated to Canada, and let's talk about that, because immigration is a huge issue here now. What it was like to be an immigrant going first to Canada. You were there several years before coming here. Let's talk about those obstacles of came up for you.
Yeah, definitely. It's always a challenge for anyone leaving your country, leaving your own culture, and the things you're used to. So coming to North America wasn't easy, because you know then you have to start over, looking for work, learning the language. English wasn't my first language. I spoke French I still speak French, but English wasn't as fluent. So I had to learn English. I had to learn the new ways of life. That's what you go against when you're a newcomer. You have to start over, integration and seeing things that are different from your own culture. How do you navigate from what you're accustomed to the new way of living in a new country and new culture? So I navigated by going back to school, so that helped me learn the language as well, but learn new skills that I could use to find a job, and also be able to inspire other immigrants in economically integrating in the society. And we bring a lot of skills as immigrants, but it was always hard to see people, you know, resort to maybe just driving taxis when they had PhD in this, PhD in that, just because you're new. But immigrants bring a lot to build their new society, their new home, basically.
Yes, they do contribute a lot. And I'm wondering, what was for you, if you look back, what was the most strangest thing, or the difference of where you grew up in Burundi and coming to North America and to Western culture? What was the hardest thing to get used to, or the most different? You know, different than what you were used to.
Oh yeah, a lot of differences. Start with the weather. The weather was really hot. Especially we lived in Canada. It was during the winters there was a lot of cold and a lot of snow, so we had to get used to that. Food was another adjustment, because it's like your taste buds are new. You have to develop new taste buds for the new food you consume in a different country. But also being able to go back to, you know, to go back to work or to start working, raising a family, that was another adjustment, you know, when in our culture, in our culture of origin, you have a sense of community. We always hear the expression, it takes a village to raise a child. It's really true because, you know, everybody helps you raise your child in many African communities. But here you're on your own, and you're raising a family, you're doing everything at the same time, and it's an adjustment. It's a big adjustment.
Yes, and I have a sense of, too, of feeling isolated. I mean, we were talking about that yesterday in our monthly call, that even we, in our culture, there's a lot of isolation, that women feel isolated, and yet here you've come from a totally different culture and have to integrate into ours and probably have a real sense of being isolated and alone, dealing with, that, you know, being an immigrant and all the things that you have to learn and adjust yourself to.
Yeah, it's really hard, and it was really hard because I saw also many other immigrants, you know, struggling to just, you know, struggling to leave. You know, you come to this new country and you think things are going to be better, and it's better in many ways, so I wouldn't take that away, but at the same time, it's a challenge because sometimes you get disillusioned because you think, oh, okay, this is what I came for, or I came to. Things should be easy all the time. But I always tell immigrants, you know, no, life is life. As long as you're in safety, life is always, you know, it's going to have some moments of challenges. And that's what evolving through adversity means. You have to take the good and try to change the bad, whatever you can change, because not everything, you cannot control everything. And what you cannot control, you can only let it go and let it be. And just try to move forward with life and try to make a better life for yourself and your family. And helping others is also a big part of how you can evolve through adversity. Yeah.
Well, you're in the United States now, and you know the big immigration problem we're having. And are you in touch with immigrants here and are getting a sense of you know, the fears and the challenges that they're going through? Are you connected to other immigrants here?
Oh, yes, I am. I'm actually, I sometimes get, you know, to speak to different groups of immigrants and communities. And I know many immigrants having issues as well, just to get integrated in the American society. The immigration issues that we are seeing, it's not just about on the border. Even those who are inside the country already have issues because, you know, you have refugees especially who come and don't get processed for many, many years, and they get stuck in the system, and they can't, you know, in most cases they can't work, or even when they work, they cannot work in the fields of passion where they have the skills. So yeah, I'm in contact and I see the challenges that of immigration, the immigration system.
Mhm. Yeah, no, it's great for you to be in touch with those, because you've had the experience and you've moved through it for yourself in many ways. What's still hard for you to deal with or think of as an obstacle?
I mean, life is life, you're right. What I do is try to be a voice wherever I can, and educate about diversity and inclusion. For example, when we talk about different people of different culture, different nationality, different religion, different everything, you know, we are different. Like I said in the TED talk, we are different, but we are not all that different. There is a lot of common ground we can work on, and I work on what unites us and educate communities, organizational leaders, and how to use diversity as a lever, not it's an asset, it's not a liability, and really develop their businesses with the benefits of diversity. So that's what I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned about we're not as not that different. That, you know, what do you see as the common ground? Because that's, you know, in doing this work, and people from say warring countries, or I know people that have worked in that area, it's finding the common ground to get people to talk together. What do you see as the common ground?
You know, being an immigrant myself, a woman, and an African American. I've seen many mishaps and many mishandlings of what it means to be different. So I recognize the strengths in being united, and that's why I use my experiences and background to educate about diversity. When it comes to race, for instance, in America, I see a lot of fear in having conversations that are race-related, but those issues are not going away just because we are ignoring it. So I think we have a lot in common. What separates us is also what can unite us, that human experience each one of us has, regardless of what race you are, or culture, or gender, or religion, or any other social identity. So it's important that as a society we come together and truly learn from one another and heal each other's wounds, because I think we are operating from some of us may be operating from the wounded parts of ourselves. But what I teach people is first you have to know who you are. What you want for yourself and why you are here, which is ultimately the purpose you have in life. And then that way you can extend the compassion to others and have more empathy for others, for those who are different. We're just learning to be, to dehumanize each other instead of working together and building communities.
Jasmine, you talked about, what I'm getting from this too is communicating and to not be afraid. You know, we kind of get stuck in our bubbles and talk to people of like mind, you know, because that's safe. And how can we talk with people who are different? Different political views or as you say, the racial, you know, different races that we are, and getting over those fears and the importance of communicating. And we talk about common ground. I mean, we all want peace. We all want our children to be taken care of. We all want our children to have education, you know, to find those, what is it that we want to work for? We may have difference of opinions of how to go about it. And, the form of all that, but it starts to dial up when you start thinking about what it is that you all want to work for towards, you can start the dialogue.
Absolutely, yeah, you're absolutely right, because sometimes what is disappointing to me, I see people, especially in the media, try to approach the talking, the conversation, but it becomes more of a debate rather than a conversation. And what I I don't like about debates is there has to be a winner and a loser of the debate, but that's not a conversation. We have to create more opportunities to and a platform to come together, to listen to one another, and to express each other's fear, because if we don't listen, then we're going to just operate from our own understanding. Because if you don't know, well, what you don't know, you don't know. So we need to learn from each other and by listening and by talking.
Yeah. Yes, and we make assumptions, and there's a saying about just approaching it with curiosity and like, why does someone think that way? Why does someone think different than me? What is their background? What have they gone through that they think this way? And to be curious, to have a, you know, and then that brings a dialogue of once you have an understanding, like, oh, okay, that's where that comes from. I can understand that. You don't have to agree with it. It's not, you know, what I believe, but to have compassion for other people of what they've gone through and how they've come to who they are. And who knows, if you're shining your light and doing what you do that you know is right, it can impact others to again see where you're coming from, and perhaps a shift inside them will happen, and plus a shift inside yourself. You know, it needs to come from both sides.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, it needs to, you know, everybody has a story, like I always say, but we only can do what we know and from where we are, and that enrichment between each other is, you know, the difference is the asset actually each one of us brings, and then we can use those differences to celebrate our diversity in ourselves and in others, and like you said, sometimes it will help you shift perspective because it adds more to you, to your knowledge of the world. Something you probably didn't know before you talked to this person you thought was so different from you, but then you see that there is a lot of commonality, and sometimes there is a lot of wounds in everyone from our, you know, from our past that we have not worked on to heal, and that's why we can heal from reflecting on our own stories and then extend that healing to others.
Yeah, and like you said, we all have wounds. So I think I heard you say even both the perpetrator and the victims are wounded, and sometimes we don't see it that way, but that it is true. Perpetrators often are perpetrating because they were wounded and they're just repeating what someone did to them.
Yeah, you are right. The perpetrator and the oppressed and the oppressor basically are both wounded in the way that maybe when you're the oppressed, you think of yourself as the victim. But the oppressor also is coming from a wounded part of himself or herself from things they have not dealt with. And that's what creates bullying in schools. That's what creates bullying in our communities, in our political systems, because we're coming from a wounded part of ourselves. Because when you've worked on that and you have reached the enlightenment in yourself and the transformation, you really don't have time to bully others. You use your energy to create and to heal and to bring people together and not divide them.
So I understand that you talk to students and young people and go to schools. Is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm wondering what you're seeing there. It's a new generation coming up, and we hear about the bullying, but also I would think that there's a whole new generation of very creative young people who, you know, what are they bringing to the table to bring about a positive change in our world? What are you seeing?
Yeah, what I like about young people is that, you know, it's a generation that's studying from, they don't have necessarily the history background that grown-ups, like baby boomers, maybe my generation and your generation come from. So they're seeing things for what they are today. And some of the things they don't understand is the backing, the history of that. So that's where probably they need more education. And when they understand where it comes from, then they can see what they can do in their own time. And, you know, every generation needs to bring new things to new legacy, to leave new legacies. What they bring to the table is that newness, you know. They don't have necessarily the baggage that we have. And they also want a just world. They thrive for equality. They thrive for equity. They're the ones, you know, touring countries fighting for decent gun laws. They're the ones fighting for women need pay equality, racial equity. They bring so much to the table. So I just love to talk to young people, and they have a thirst to learn from to learn about other cultures, other parts of the world where they've never been. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I would think with that newness that there comes like new a creativity of an ideas of how we might work through these diversity issues of racism and sexism and all this. How do you see them work? Particularly racism. I would imagine. I mean, that's something that you would be observant of being of a different race and being African. What are you seeing there for how they might change things for us?
So, for example, when I present on racial equity or anything related to learning about how to overcome racism, young people, they're not racist. They just don't know how to handle someone from a different race because it's not what they grew up seeing. And if they've never learned about different races in their homes or in the school, then where are they learning from? So this is what I bring to young people in schools, to give them that perspective of seeing other races other than what they are, and seeing the differences as something they can celebrate. I remember there was one instance where I presented at a university, and this young girl, she's a white girl, so she shared how she grew up in a community where she's never seen black people, and when she saw them, her mother told her to not play with the black kids, not to interact with black people. She went to school where there were no black students. But then when she chose to go to the university, she chose a school where she was sure there would be black people. It was a historically black university. And so she wanted to meet black people because she was always curious. Who are they? How are they? Because, in her home, she never learned. So she said that the first time she interacted with other black students, she didn't know how basically to interact with them because she felt awkward around them and because she's never. So she made it a point to really learn about black people, black history, major in black studies and African-American studies. So she was one of the students that I saw had a thirst in knowing other people, but because of the background in her upbringing, she didn't know what she didn't know. Now she was finding out for herself. So that was, you know, something I celebrate in young people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's being interested in finding out about other people and curiosity and learning from other people. And yeah, I mean, there's so much for us to deal with in this institutionalized racism that we have here in the country. That what do you see is maybe one thing that people can do that can move us forward to through this important issue that we're facing?
I think, like we were saying, starting to see race as race, not as something we have to use to hate one another, because we are all different races, we are different backgrounds. So race in itself is not the problem. It's people using race as something to prevent other races to achieve, for instance, economic empowerment, education, and it's institutionalized because it is in our institutions, and those institutions didn't put themselves in place. They were put in place by people, and so it's only people who are going to work on taking the racism out of our institutions. And when you think about, for instance, the criminal justice in the United States, and, you know, how we see some communities are very over-policed, for instance. All those are systems in place, and we, as a people, we have to come together and work on taking the racism out of the institutions.
So what... maybe just one thought on what you would do to take it's a big job taking the racism out of the institutions that have been around for, you know, quite a few years.
Yeah.
It's just ingrained in them. What's it going to take?
What's it going to take? It's going to take all of us working together.
Yeah.
It's going to take all of us working together, not being, not shying away from the responsibility, and not denying it when we see it, and really rising up to the occasion when we see instances of racism. All of us, regardless of what race you are, because when we know that, you know, if one race is oppressed, we are all oppressed. If we see it that way, then we're going to take steps, each one in our own capacities, starting in our homes, how we talk to our children, our families, how we deal with race in our families, in our schools, as a teachers, as a school administrators, and opening doors in corporations to see different people, you know, climb the ladder, talking about it in the media and not just debating about it. So it's going to take all the institutions and all the communities and individuals as well to work on this. And I think it's something we can do as a people, you know, as a society. We've overcome many different problems in the past. So this is something we just have to acknowledge first and then change. Because you can't change what you don't acknowledge. And I think most, you know, in most cases, it's been put under the rug. It, you know, now it's just like this big elephant in the room no one wants to address, but it's the elephant is still there, whether you look at it or not.
Yes. Yeah. And there's so much about, and they talk about there's white privilege. And I like it when you talk about the university student who is educating herself, talking to black people, taking classes. It's up to us to find out and discover why do I have white privilege? What are the differences here? And that means talking to people and finding out. And it's up to us to do that, educate ourselves, and do what we can to whatever towards creating the change that we're all wanting to see and are wanting to have, the equity for everybody. Well, it was so great to have you on the show today, and I'm looking forward to having you at the conference, Sikhon.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I'm looking forward to the conference as well.
Yes, and we can tell that you are passionate about this work of working with on diversity and inclusion, and so I applaud you in that work that you're doing. And to keep that up, and I love it that you're bringing that passion and what you are doing to Women of Wisdom this year.
Oh, thank you so much.
So everybody can check out Sikhon's website, Sikhon Nemiya. I'm not sure if I'm saying your name right.
You're okay.
All right, SikhonNemiya.com. Nemanya.com, and you can find that link on the Woman of Wisdom website, and you can check out all the offerings we have. Like I said, there are a few separate tickets just for Saturday Night Banquet. It's mostly reserved for the people going all day Saturday. There's only X number of seats for people who want to come Saturday night. We encourage you to check out the whole program, some wonderful workshops. We have intimate, experiential workshops. They're 3 hours long. A variety to choose from. And we have community meals, or we have some activities even during the meals, some fun things to do. And so there's a lot of community building and interacting with other fabulous women and making new friends. And we invite you to join us February 15th through the 17th. And also want to point out on the 15th is a special event. We've added a Friday night event. It's open to men. It's a separate ticket. And that's a musical that Pamela Gerke, one of our WOW members, she's written musicals for us before. She's written a musical on Florence Nightingale, and it's her 200th birthday in 2019. So, and Florence Nightingale is quite a powerful woman and made change in the nursing field way back 200, well, she would have been older, maybe it's 150, 160 years ago. But at any rate, an amazing story. And so I invite you to check that out, too, for Friday night. And again, that's open to men, and it's a separate ticket from the conference. So thank you for listening today. And tomorrow I'm going to be talking with Karen Joy Fletcher, who's one of our WOW members and presenters. She's doing a workshop on play and wonder, and she does this fabulous Qigong work. And we're going to look forward to talking to her tomorrow. So everybody have a great day, and come back and listen again to the shows. You can always go online to blogtalkradio.com. Voices of Women with Chris Danis, and listen to any of the past shows we've done. I've been interviewing this past week presenters, and I'll be here all next week interviewing more of our Women of Wisdom presenters. So stay tuned, and we'll be back later. Bye.